Okay. As usual, we are gathered here today to listen to another dispensation of the Lord Buddha's teaching. Let us with no doubt remind ourselves that He is the master, He is the proprietor, He is the owner. It is because of Him that we have this gift of Dhamma today. I am nothing other than a vehicle for this Dhamma. Bearing in mind that it is because of the unequaled one, the unparalleled one, the perfectly enlightened one, the blessed one, the supremely enlightened one, we have this Dhamma today. It is because of His infinite sacrifice in samsara, over many millions of eons, on the quest for the search of the truth. All His sacrifices was for us, to give us the path to freedom, to give us the path to self-emancipation. Reflecting on that, bearing that in mind, let us pay homage to the supremely enlightened Gautama, Lord Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Also, before we commence, let us take a moment to observe the five precepts. As I always remind you, reflect again on the fact that once again this week we are having to observe the precepts. One who is still in training is someone who needs to observe precepts. One who has completed the training no longer has to observe precepts, because the virtue becomes part of the very fabric of who they are. So again, bearing in mind that I am someone who is still in training, I am still a human being, a bundle of raga, dvesha, moha, walking on two legs, reflecting on that, contemplating on that, let us all take a moment to observe the five precepts, in the hope, in the wish, in the determination that may this have to be the last time I have to observe the five precepts. In order to do so, I ask you all to recite the Namaskara Pata three times and all together. Buddham saranam gacchami, Dhammam saranam gacchami, Sangham saranam gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Sarana gamanam sampunnam. Panatipata veramani sikha padam samadhiyami. Adinnadana veramani sikha padam samadhiyami. kamesu micchachara veramani sikha padam samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikha padam samadhiyami. Suramiraya majjapama dattana veramani sikha padam samadhiyami. Tisaranena saddhim panchasilam dhammam sadukham surakkitam katva appamadena sampadeta. Okay, even now we'll be seated. Also, before we commence, let us take a moment again to reflect on the fact that throughout our infinitely long journey in samsara, there will have been many beings, humans, celestial, divine, and so on and so forth, who may have been there for our support, to help us, for our assistance, when the need may have arisen in the past and in the present. They may have helped us in many different ways, shapes and forms. And throughout samsara, because we did not have the gift of Dhamma, we were unable to pay them back duly. However, today, we have the gift of Dhamma which excels all gifts, and so we are in a prime position to be able to return the favors that they have done for us. Reflect on the fact that perhaps some of them are today born in the woeful planes because they might have committed themselves to redeeming us from the woeful planes. Think for a moment about perhaps your parents who might have put themselves forward to commit some unwholesome deeds on your behalf. If those unmeritorious deeds, those unwholesome deeds might have come to them, might have come to their recollection at the moment of death, it is difficult to say where their following birth might have been. So, let us all take a moment to invite all those beings. Let us take a moment to invite the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons and the dead, our ancestors, those who have predeceased us. Let us open this opportunity for them to join us. If any of them have been born in the woeful plane, may they be able to witness this meritorious deed and acquire due merit to enable them, to empower them to be born in the blissful plane. And for those beings who are in the blissful plane, to be able to witness this meritorious deed, as well as to listen to this Dhamma sermon, to be able to understand and comprehend this teaching, the Buddha's teaching, in order that they may be able to redeem themselves from the shackles of samsara once and for all. So with that hope, wish and prayer in mind, let us invite all the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons and the dead. So as I now make this invitation, I invite you all to extend that invitation out in your hearts and in your minds. May they join us, may they witness this meritorious deed, and may they be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Samanta chakravalesu Atra gacchantu devata Sadhammam munirajasa Sunantu sagamokkadam Dhammasavana kalo ayam badanta Dhammasavana kalo ayam badanta Dhammasavana kalo ayam badanta. Most venerable members of the Mahasangha, distinguished members of the audience, let us also take a brief moment to reflect once again on the fact that although today our lives have changed beyond the recognition of who we were before this Dhamma touched our lives, But although we are today clad in robes and you perhaps in white, representing our current state of mind, throughout samsara we have not always received the gift of Dhamma. In fact, virtually always our associations have not been with noble ones or moral ones. In fact, they have virtually always been with ignoble people and ignoble people. People who defiled our minds with raga, dvesha, moha, desire, aversion and delusion, blinded us with avidya and tanha, ignorance and attachment, and having done so we may have desecrated, insulted, abused, offended the noble ones, the Samma Sambuddhas, the Paccheka Buddhas, Arahatta Buddhas, Anagami, Sakurdagami, Sotapannas, be they on the path or having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddha's ministry, the Sambuddha Shasane, for any words or deeds or thoughts of slander, abuse that we might have directed towards them in our ignorance or in our knowledge. Such deeds, such words, such thoughts may today block and hinder our progress, our understanding of the Dhamma. So prior to us commencing, let us all take a moment to fervently, genuinely seek their forgiveness for any hurt, for any harm, for any abuse or slander that we might have directed towards them. And finally, let us all make a firm resolve that through the course of this very sermon, if there are any gaps in my understanding, in my comprehension, that keep me from attaining the first noble attainment of Sotapanna, may I be able to fulfill those gaps. And for anyone among you who might have already attained that state, may this sermon help you to fulfill the subsequent stages and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana through the course of this sermon itself. With that firm resolve in mind, I invite you all to be prepared to listen to this sermon. Okay. The voice record has been running for just over 14 minutes now. What a waste of 14 minutes, right? All this nonsense we spit out at the beginning of a sermon. Observing five precepts, all that malarkey. Namo tassa bhagavato. What's all that stuff? Let's just get to the meat. Don't need all the stuff around the bone. Let's just get to the juicy stuff, right? Inviting the devas, brahmas, what a waste of time. Seeking forgiveness from the noble ones. Ever felt that way? Minutes. It's a long time. Countless times I've reminded you that we need a really good and solid foundation on which this palace of Dhamma that we build in our hearts can be built on. Doesn't matter what size or shape this palace is going to be eventually, but if you don't have a good foundation, then it's not going to stand. It's not going to stand the test of time. When the weather's come, when the rains come and the storms come, it's not going to stand the test. It's all going to come crashing down. And then you're going to regret. And that might be several years from now. In our ignorance, we might think, what's all this waste of time? Why do we have to pay homage to the Buddha, invite the devas? You know, I can't even see them, for heaven's sakes. You know, why do I bother? Let's just get to the Dhamma sermon. People might feel that way. Some people might even ask you, why does Swami Nohadis do all that preamble before we get into the sermon? This is all to do with setting the foundation. And this is why also that I spend time in explaining why we do these things, even at least briefly. Before I ask you to observe the five precepts, I remind you, why do we have to observe these precepts? It's one thing to just for me to just sit down here and chant Panatipata Veeramani, and then you know, we've done it so many times now. Countless times, right? More than the number of hairs on your head. How many times have you observed the five precepts now? It's just become the done thing now, right? Before the beginning of a sermon or any meritorious deed, chant the Namaskara, then Buddhang Sarnang, Dhammang Sarnang, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, and then the five precepts. It's just the done thing. That's just how we do things here. We mustn't fall for that trap. We must always remind ourselves that these are things we are still having to do. The day that you have completed this journey, well, I said you wouldn't even have to come here. What? Which one's the prettier Frau? I asked you last week. Today we only have one type. Perhaps you didn't like the purple, so they didn't put them this time. They didn't bother. So once we complete this journey, then you will no longer have to do them. You will no longer have to do merit once you have completed this journey. This is a long journey. And on the way, you're going to have to refuel. You're going to have to stop at a gas station. Well, petrol station, as they call them here. That's American, right? Gas station? Yes. We need fuel to get through our journey. This is the fuel. We need to check our tires before we set forth. What happens if you get a flat tire on the way? Now it's a lot of trouble. But at least if you know you haven't got good tires, then you can change your tires or pick a different vehicle to start your journey. Things you have to check before you begin. In the driving test, do they not check, ask you to make sure that your indicators work before you set forth or after you've gone halfway on your journey? When do they ask you to check your brakes? Before. Not after the fact. Then it's too late. Well, if you have time, I'll show you a video of what happens when sometimes people forget to check their brakes before the journey. Forget to check their indicators before the journey. Likewise, on our path in the Dhamma, we have to make sure that our brakes are good, our tires are good, our indicators are good, our wiper blades are solid, there are no cracks in them, and we've got a good solid vehicle to take us through. This is not talking about this body. That's one sense of the word vehicle. But this is talking about the state of mind. This is talking about how much merit we have. This is talking about how much we owe to all other beings who are just waiting for the right opportunity to come and ask for us to pay back the dues that we owe them. There are beings who we can see with our muscular eyes, and there are those that we cannot. Whether you believe it or not is out of the question. Doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. Doesn't matter whether you believe in radio waves or ultrasound or not. It doesn't matter. It's just there. It doesn't even matter whether you like it or not. I don't like radio waves. Well, tough. It's just there. I don't like the sun. Tough. For as long as you're in a solar system, it's called a solar system because there's a solar. And that's the sun. For as long as you live in one, you're going to have to put up with the sun. So there are certain things in the universe, in this cosmos, that we have to accept. There's a really good saying in Sinhala, if you jump into a well, you have to come out of the mouth through which you jumped in. We've all come to play this game. We all signed the contract. You didn't read the terms of the contract. Whose fault is that now? The one who got you to sign, or the fact that you signed it? Well, we signed it. How many times have you regretted signing contracts? And then looked back and you thought, what did I do? Those contracts come in all shapes, sizes and forms, right? You know what I'm talking about. If you don't read the terms, then you're going to have to regret later on. But regretting does not solve any problem. So, if we are to walk this journey wisely, we can't do this blindly. We've got to open our eyes. We have to be able to consider. You don't necessarily have to accept at least be open to consideration. You don't have to accept that there are devas and brahmas and spirits and demons and the dead. You don't have to accept it, but at least be willing to consider. Because the moment you stop willing to consider, then you've dug yourself a hole. Because what if they really do exist? What if people did not, people were not willing to, you know, in the time of Socrates, people weren't willing to accept that the world was round. They thought the world was flat. People weren't willing to accept that. And in their haste, they got rid of a great scientist, a great philosopher. They got him to drink poison. What a shame. What a waste. How much more could he have done to serve humankind if he was still, well, not still around, at least, you know, around for a bit longer? You know, one could easily think there are no devas, there are no brahmas, there are no hells, there are no heavens. Now you don't believe in karma vipaka? You don't believe in good and bad? Nati ayang loko, nati paro loko? Nati ittan, nati sukang, nati sukata dukkatanang, kammanam palang vipako? I don't believe in giving. No, what's the point of charity? What's the point of fulfilling duties and responsibilities? That's just, you know, why? I'm a human being, there's another human being. You know, I live my life, you live your life. There's no such thing as fulfilling duties and responsibilities. What happens then? The things that we've done in our previous lives, the things that we've done, not just in previous lives, but in this life, not knowing what we've done, that can come back to bite us on our backs. And when it bites hard. And it doesn't matter whether you're prepared to accept that or not. This is why I say, you know, sometimes some of you may come from very materialistic backgrounds, just as much as I was once. When I was first introduced to the Dhamma, my life was completely different to what it is now. My state of mind, the way I looked at the world was very different. My perspective of life and the world was very different. Unimaginably. You wouldn't believe it was me if you spoke to me 10 years ago. I didn't even believe in the Buddha. Who is he? It's just another man. How is he different from me? I didn't believe in karma vipaka, what's hells, heavens, you know, show me if it's there and then I'll believe it. That's what I thought. So it's okay if you don't accept it, but be prepared, be willing to consider. Because if you're willing to consider, you're never going to throw away a good book. A friend might come and offer you a good book. No, I don't read that kind of stuff. I don't read that stuff, I just read fiction. I don't like poetry. Throw it in the bin. What a waste. What if one day you begin to like poetry? What if that was the greatest book in poetry that was ever written? What if that was by William Wordsworth? Now you just chucked it in the bin. Now you're going to have to go around the houses, knocking on people's doors, going around on finding bookshops to find these valuable artifacts that you just discarded, threw away. What a shame, what a waste. Because when the need arises, it's not going to be there if you're not willing to consider. So be prepared to consider. Don't have to accept. There's no room for blind faith in Buddhism. At least not in Buddhist philosophy. There's no room for blind faith. With faith you have to accept. Not in Buddhism. In Buddhism, be willing to consider. If it doesn't seem appropriate right now, don't throw it. Just put it on the shelf. There's plenty of room in the shelf, isn't there? How much stuff do you know right now? How much more stuff are you willing to know? Are you willing to learn? How many terabytes is your memory? Okay, how many petabytes or exabytes is your memory? There's no limit. You can chuck any amount of stuff in there. So you're not wasting by putting another book in there. You're not wasting space. So just consider. One day it'll all start to make sense. And then you'll soon start to join the dots. And then everything will become clear. Until then, don't discard them. Just put them away. Just keep them on the side. Be willing to consider. So when we start these sermons, this is why I say, you know, let's take the moment to pay homage to the Lord Buddha. Because without that appreciation, that it is because of that great being that we have this gift of Dhamma. You know, for one who does not respect their teachers, the art or the science that you are trying to learn will never be something that you will comprehend. That's just the way of the world. If you don't have any reverence, if you don't have any regard for your teacher, then you're not going to be able to understand. You know, these are all great values that we used to have in our society. I remember when I first went to the UK, I went for my first lesson at college. When my maths teacher turned up, that was the first lesson I had. I stood up from my seat. And everyone looked at me awkwardly. What are you doing, mate? People asked me. Well, that's my teacher walking into the class. Well, I must stand up and pay respect. What do you mean pay respect? Sit down. So that was the last time I actually stood up physically. But the value of respecting my teachers was something my parents taught me from a very young age. So it was a value that I will never forget. Because that is what made me who I am today. It is what helped me come this way. It is what paved this path for me to be where I am right now, to have donned a robe, to have been able to receive the gift of Dhamma from the greatest teacher ever. If I had not paid respect to those teachers who taught me math and science and English and whatever languages or whatever subjects I learnt at school, I would not have been in a state of mind to receive the greatest gift ever, the greatest teaching ever from the greatest teacher ever. Where are you all on the valuometer? Over several weeks, I think a few weeks ago, we discussed a lot about values. And I reminded you all the value of making sure we have a really good and solid foundation in values. And particularly us who come from an Asian, Sri Lankan background, these values are a fundamental part of who we are. And that's not to say people who come from the Western world do not have values. That's not what I'm trying to imply. It's just I don't know a lot about those values. Because this is where I come from. So something I do know about Sri Lankan culture, about Asian culture, is that we have a lot of values. And these values were values that were passed down to us from our ancestors, who are arahants. Going many thousands of years back, this is where some of those values started. Someone walked up to me last week and asked, why do we offer flowers to the Buddha? What's the point of offering incense? Why do we offer an oil lamp? What's the point? The Buddha's not here. Really good questions. But these were not things that... These were all things that our ancestors used to do, but not just because. They had meaning behind them. Respecting our elders, respecting our teachers, respecting our parents, all fundamental, intricately woven parts of our fabric, of who we are. So make sure we don't forget them. Make sure you always teach your children about them and show them by example. A few weeks ago I asked you, particularly the parents here, do you worship your parents before you go to bed at night? Do you let your children see how you do that? Perhaps your parents are not among living right now, but that's okay. Go in front of the Buddha. Once you've paid respect, once you worship the Buddha, now it's time to worship your parents. Datama seure katva. Buddhikaro alingitva. Worship your parents. Let your children see you doing that. And then they'll ask you, Amma, what did you just say that? Tate, what did you just say? What did you just recite? Oh, I'm worshipping my parents. But they're dead. Why do you have to worship them now? Because it's not the person that we are worshipping. It's not the physical body, this person that we are worshipping. It's the qualities that we're worshipping. It's those qualities that my parents had that they passed down to me. Who am I if not the qualities that I portray? Who are you if you are not the qualities that you portray? Ask your friends, why do you like me? Or ask your enemies, why do you hate me? What are they going to say? They're going to say, I like you because you're nice to me, because I see you helping other people, because you're very kind, because you speak soft words, because you're very respectful to others, because you're very generous. What are these? Qualities, values. Ask someone why they don't like you very much. Because you speak harsh words. That's why I don't like you. Because you always lie. That's why I don't like you. Because you're always complaining and moaning about something or the other. All the time. That's why I don't like you. See? Again, what are they complaining about? The qualities. So good qualities and bad qualities always existed in the world. Who you are is nothing but the amalgamation of those qualities, good and bad. So our quest on this path in Dhamma is really, you know, one might think I'm trying to become an Arahant. Others might think I'm trying to attain Nibbana. Often I say, you know, put them both to a side. Let's instill these values within us. Because when you instill these values, the rest will happen automatically. Before we start the sermon, we always pay respect to our teacher. That is the supremely enlightened Buddha. Because if not for him, if not for those qualities that sprang in his mind, that infinite compassion, how much compassion did the Buddha have? How many kilos of compassion? That's infinite. How much wisdom did he have? How much concentration did he have? How generous was he? Come on, give me an answer to that if you can. If you dare, I say. How kind was the Buddha? Again, when we speak of the Buddha, is what springs to mind just his figure? You know, we speak of the 32 physical attributes of a Buddha, that is Mahapurusha Lakshana. We speak of them, yes. But is that what immediately springs to mind? I mean, do you stop at that? Is that how you see the Buddha? What was Buddha's instruction to Vakkali? So, yo dhammang passati, so mam passati. You must see the Dhamma to have seen me. Once you've seen the Dhamma, you don't have to do anything else to see me. Once you've seen the Dhamma, you've seen me. In other words, what he's saying is, once you've seen the Dhamma, you have seen the qualities of the Buddha. This is why in one of the sermons I proved to you that acquiring and accumulating and instilling these values and trying to comprehend the Dhamma are not two different things. They are one and the same. And then we recite, Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami. Why? To while away a few minutes? Dutiyampi, tatiyampi, twice and for the third time, I seek homage. What do we seek homage for? Who seeks homage? Let's start there. Who seeks homage? Refugees seek homage. Who are refugees? Generally people who are destitute, who are helpless, who need support, who need looking after, who need taking care of, because they've lost everything. And then you're thinking, what do you mean I've lost everything? I drove here in my 7 series BMW. What do you mean I've lost everything? You should come round Swami Bhante and see my house. I've got 7 bedrooms. What do you mean I've lost everything? Look what everything I've got. What do you mean? Check my bank account. I'm loaded. What do you mean I've lost everything? Do you really feel like refugees? Are we really lost? Are you destitute? Are you in despair? Why? Where are you lost? In samsara. How much money in your bank account will show you the way? How many houses in Colombo 7 will show you the way out of samsara? Okay, put Colombo 7 to a side. New York City. You want to go even better? Trafalgar Square. Kingston Palace. So has the Queen found a way out of samsara? How do you know? What if she's listening to these sermons right now? Never be judgmental. Only you can answer for yourself. Am I destitute? Am I in despair? Am I lost in samsara? Only we know the answer to that. We can't make that call for somebody else. But what we can say for sure and say for certain is, it's not the material wealth, the material possessions, or the amount of stuff that we know that takes us and liberates us from samsara. It's the key that we need to unlock this lock. That we ourselves have firmly put a lock on. Nobody else. We put that lock on, and then what we do was we threw the key away. And now we are looking for the key in darkness. You're feeling around, trying to find the key, but with your eyes closed. And it's not just solid ground where you're going to feel that there's something that touches your foot or your hand. You know, if it was a tiled floor, you lost a key, you just have to feel around and you might find it. But it's not like that. On this journey, there are lots of things on the ground. Where you threw the key, there are also fake keys. That's the bigger problem. There are keys that look like the right key, but it's the wrong key. Then there are also deep holes into which sometimes the key that you threw away might have fallen. Now how are you going to find it by feeling in the dark? It's the hole. You're going to have to put your arm in to pick it up. So this is certainly not something that we can do in the darkness. Sunata dhareta charata, said the Buddha. Sunata, listen. Listen to what? The Dhamma. What is the Dhamma? What is the gift? Remember last week, I think, if I remember correctly, I gave you I related a story from the Buddha's life where he went into this forest and he looked around and then he asks Venerable Ananda, Ananda, I've picked up a handful of leaves, right? Remember? Was it last week I said this? I have picked up a handful of leaves in my hand. Which of these do you think is more? The number of leaves in my hand or the number of leaves in all the trees in this forest? So, the point I tried to put forward to you last week was, when the Buddha knew so much, he's omniscient. Omniscient is knowing everything. If there's anything to know, the Buddha knew it. The limit of his knowledge is everything there is to know. Works both ways. If there's anything to know, the Buddha knows it. And the limit of what the Buddha knows, that is all there is to know. There's nothing else that needs to be known, that can be known. So he was omniscient. In his omniscience, when he knew everything about the universe, why did he focus his teaching on just 4 things? Just four things. 84,000 sutras, all focused on four things. The Four Noble Truths.
Do we have a bottle of water?
The Four Noble Truths. He focused his teaching on the Four Noble Truths. When he knew so much, and he focused it on these Four Noble Truths. Because that is the key that we need to unlock, this lock. Everything else, keys, but not the right key. Not the right key. Fake keys. Sometimes they are lookalikes, but not the real thing. Michael Jackson, lookalikes. Not the real thing. It's not the real deal. He can dance, but not quite like the original. Not quite like. So, Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. First, Sunata. Listen. Listen from whom? From someone who has seen for himself. It has to be either the Buddha or a disciple of the Buddha. Who is a disciple of the Buddha? One who is in robes? No. One who has seen the Dhamma for himself or herself. Sunata can only happen from someone who is a Buddha or a disciple of the Buddha. Then Dharata. To bear. Bear what? The Buddha? No, the Dhamma. Dharata. Bear the Dhamma. What kind of Dhamma? Which of the leaves in that forest do you think you have to bear? All the leaves in all the trees? No. Not even all the leaves that was in the Buddha's handful. You just probably need one of it. Or maybe just a quarter of it. That's all we need. To cross this ocean of samsara. That's all we are trying to do here. Because our lives aren't long enough. We don't have the privilege of lifetime to study everything that the Buddha taught us. Let alone everything that he knew. How much life span do you think you're going to need to know everything that the Buddha did? How much life do you think you will need? Twenty incalculable eons. That's how long. If you're willing to live that long, go through samsara for that long with that one resolve in mind, I can guarantee you will. Start now. But I don't know about you, but I just can't wait that long. I can't wait that long. I want to do this here and now. Dhammang saranang gacchami. I have no other refuge than the Dhamma. I have no refuge other than the Buddha, because it's only the Buddha that taught us the way out of samsara. There's no other teacher, no other philosopher that came into this universe and spoke of the Four Noble Truths. There is no other teacher that showed us the key that unlocks this door to mental happiness. Everyone else gave a way for mental relief, not for redemption. I'll vouch for it. You cannot bring me the Bible and show me the Four Noble Truths. You cannot show me anywhere in the Bible where it says attachment is the cause of all suffering. It just cannot be there. If it is, then it's the Buddha that wrote the Bible. You cannot bring me the Holy Quran and show me one place where it says attachment is the cause for all suffering. You cannot. If that is the case, then it was the Buddha who wrote the Bible, or rather the Quran. Because it was only him, the Lord Buddha, who showed us that this is the cause for all suffering. Because he went down all other avenues, every single avenue, and then came back and said, no, this is the only one that works. Now that He's given us this gift of Dhamma, now we seek homage in that. We seek refuge in the Dhamma. That is what we mean when we say, Dhammang saranang gacchami. Saranang. Saranasan. Going round this wheel of samsara, this samsaric circle. Sarisarana. To keep going round. To stop it. How? Well, there's no other way other than the Buddha, other than the Dhamma. And then charata. Sunata, dharata, charata bhikkhu. Now practice. Practice the path. Practice what you have learned from the Buddha. Put it into effect. Reap the rewards. When does one become a successful farmer? When he goes to farming school or agriculture school and learns the theory, or once he puts it into practice and reaps the reward? When does one become a successful farmer? Yes. When he reaps the fruit of the seed that he has sowed. I know a lot about farming. Does that make me a good farmer? No. It makes me a very knowledgeable farmer, not a good farmer. For me to be able to say boldly, look at me, I'm a good farmer. What will you be expecting in me? Experience in farming, right? Otherwise, I've just got book knowledge. I've just learned something that someone taught me, but really not practiced it. And I can't say, how many times will you go to a surgeon that's doing his operation for the first time? He's not even tried it at medical college. Not even on corpses. He's doing it literally for the first time on a real human body. Who's willing to go under the knife? That's why they put corpses, because they don't have a say. If a corpse could talk, they'd run for their lives. Because what makes a good surgeon is one who has practiced it and perfected it. So charata is to practice. That's when you instill the values of the Sangha within yourself. Sangha. We've spoken about the Noble Eightfold Path in previous sermons. Sangma, ditti, sangma, sankappa, sangma, vacha, kammanta, and so on. Sang is the problem. Ignorance and attachment. Gha, gasadan, to dispel, to discard and throw away. Sanghang saranang gacchami. I seek homage in the Sangha. And once we've done that, now it's our time to invite the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons and the dead. Because we are now aware, having sought refuge in the Sangha, in the Dhamma and in the Buddha, we are aware that we've come through a long time in samsara. And there are lots of beings who will have helped me to be where I am today. This is why I say, you know, in our previous lives, ladies and gentlemen, there may have been many people who sacrificed themselves for our betterment, for our good, for our benefit. Just think about your parents. How much bad deeds, unwholesome deeds, unmeritorious deeds might they have done just to keep you safe? How many cockroaches might they have killed? How many mosquitoes? How many flies might they have swatted? For what? To keep you safe. How many people might they have shouted at? How many people might they have attacked and hit? Just to keep you safe. How much might they have lied? Just to put you to a good school? That's just in this life. What about in previous lives? Everyone who might have been one of our ancestors. So we can't be forgetful of that. We can't be ungrateful. Ungratefulness is not a good foundation on which to build the palace of Nibbana. It's just not going to work. The walls are going to start cracking pretty soon. Because what we are trying to do, remember, is try to instill values within us. Gratefulness is a critically important value. Being grateful. And the Buddha showed that by example. He was an exemplary. What did he do for a whole week after having attained Buddhahood? He reflected back on everyone that had helped him. None of them were Buddhas. No, he enlightened by himself. So no one really helped him to get there. Not in that sense. But there might have been people who gave him alms when he was a bodhisattva. Teachers who might have taught them the best that they could. Alara Kala Muddhakaramaputta. Why do you think the Buddha looked back and checked where his teachers were? This is to be grateful. You know, now that I've done my thing, why else do you think the Buddha wanted to... Why did you think the Buddha bothered? He is now the Buddha. There's no one above him. There's nowhere else to go. Nothing else more to achieve. Whatever there is to achieve, he has now achieved. So does he need anybody else's help from that point forward? No. For alms and things like that, yes. But what he did was reflected, looked at his past, everyone that had helped him, and sought an opportunity to pay back. And this is what we do. Because, like I said at the start, whether you are willing to accept or not, those beings to whom we might have done disservice, we might have hurt, harmed, abused and slandered, they are looking for the right opportunity to come and attack us. Some of you may have had experiences. Sometimes, you know, in your own lives, do you not go to Kovils and Devalas and things like that and do Bodhi Puja and things like that? Because you get trouble from these beings that you cannot see, but you are not willing to accept that they exist. I've asked you in the past, why do you offer an alms to the temple, wherever, every year, reminding about, you know, thinking about your parents and transfer merits to them? Why do your parents need merit if they have now been born in the heavens? They've got more than you have. Think about it. A man walks up to your door, knock, knock, knock. You open the door. You're a poor person, but you look out and he just gets out of his BMW and he says, "Can I have 1,000 rupees, please?" He's well clad, smartly dressed, tie, shirt, coat, boots, everything. He says, "Can I have 1,000 rupees, please?" What are you going to say? "Hey, mister, I don't think you need my money. Quite the contrary, I think you could help me out." You're going to ask him, "Can you give me something you might have? Because I think of the two of us, I am the one who needs help, not you. Look at my old Maruti. You've driven here in a BMW. I can't even pay my finance." So then, if we are transferring merit to our parents, who have now left us, and they are in the heavens, just think for a moment. They are in the heavens. Are you in a heaven? No, all they have to do is wish for it, and it appears in front of them. Whether it's food or clothing or whatever kind of divine pleasure that they want, all they won't have to do is wish for it. And like rubbing Aladdin's lamp, open their eyes and it's right in front of them. Can you do that? No, so who's in a better place? Them. So then is that why you transfer merit to your parents? Who needs it more then? If they are in the heavens, who needs it more? We need it more. So why do you think then we transfer merits to them? Because we are not sure. Of what? Where they might be. What does that indicate? What if they are in the woeful plane? Even people who are so adamant that there is no afterlife, even they go to temples and offer alms and they transfer merits. Just ask them, "Why did you just do that? Oh, to transfer merits. To whom? To my parents. But I thought you just said that there's no afterlife." Oh. So we have to pay back for those things that we received from them. Whatever that help might have been, it might just have been a glass of water. Might have been a grain of sand. The thing is, some of our debtors are looking for us to pay back. Because whilst you and I, we may be on a path to Nibbana, and our quest in life is to let go, our ancestors may not feel the same way. Just think about you in your life. You know, before you understood the Dhamma, before you began to walk this path on the Dhamma, if someone borrowed some money from you, were you not keen on making sure that they paid it back on time? And if they were a little bit late, did you not go and ask for a little bit more in interest and made sure you wrote it down, make sure everyone pays back every penny of it? But maybe now you're not so fussed. You ask it once, twice, three times. Ah, forget it. Might have been a samsaric debt that I owed them. You have come to me and said, these are your examples you shared with me. I'm not making stuff up. You've shared these stories with me. People right here, just among yourselves. But before you understood the Dhamma, it was by hook or by crook. I will ask once, nicely. I will ask a second time, politely. I will ask a third time, finally. And the next time, it's not using my mouth, I'm going to ask for that money. I've got arms and legs. They have to be put to good use. Just think about your own lives. Isn't that how we used to feel? You know, people used to borrow money from me. Sometimes I'd go looking for them. Give me back the money you took from me. Thankfully, I was wise enough not to use physical acts of violence against them, because that would have been, I would have regretted them now. But I was keen to go and make sure that they pay back. Remember my life goals and how I wanted to be a millionaire? Well, I couldn't become a millionaire by giving away money. I had to make sure I was collecting money. So although today your lives might have transformed, you can't expect everyone else in the world to have changed like that. So they will have given you debts, not just in this birth, but in previous births. Again, I say, whether you like to accept this or not, is regardless, irrespective. Today they come back looking for you to pay back, and with interest. So the gift that excels all gifts is the Dhamma. We didn't have the gift of Dhamma to present to them. Today we are able to do with meritorious deeds, thanks to the Buddha Shasana. Everyone has a chance here. This is the great thing about the Buddha Shasana. If you came along yesterday and the day before, where we had the Pirit chanting overnight, and the offering of the Katina robe, you know, you will all have had a great opportunity to acquire a lot of merit by doing that. And among those people will have been those that just offered someone a glass of water, maybe perhaps a bottle of water, perhaps ushered them someone to a seat. Everyone has a chance in the Buddha Shasana, everybody. Whether you're rich or you're poor, everybody has equal chance. The Buddha Shasana does not discriminate. Everyone's equal. Navajja vasalo hoti. Navajja hoti brahmana. Kammana vasalo hoti. Kammana hoti brahmana. It's not your descent that determines whether you are a vasala or a brahman. A vasala is someone who comes from a very low background. You know, the scum of the earth, not something that I use, right? It's, you know, that's the terminology that people use. They're the scum of the earth. Useless fellow. You know, sometimes people use those words. You don't know who you're insulting. Be careful. It's not your descent. It's not how much money you have in your pocket that makes you a great person or an evil or a bad person. It's your state of mind. The story of Anathapindika offering the Jetavanarama to the Buddha is one of the best examples that we can offer. In reward, he received a silver palace in the heavens. What did the person who had nothing in his pocket, just witnessing that deed, putting his arms together and just said, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. He received a golden palace. That is why the Buddha Sasana does not discriminate. Everyone's equal. Like the Mahasangha, everyone's equal. Does not matter where I come from. Does not matter where Dasahandru comes from. Doesn't matter where anybody comes from. Once we've come into the Shasana, once we've donned robes, we're all equal. Big or small, short or thin or fat or whatever, black or white, we're all equal. From that point forward, what makes us differ is the state of mind that we have, our understanding of the Dhamma. And that is not something that is limited to a few people. Everybody can go walk this path. So it's an equal race. Well, it's not a race, it's a race against ourselves, not against the guy standing next to you. So now that we have the gift of this Dhamma, it is our time to offer this gift back to those beings who are looking for us to pay back what we owe them. You know, in those worlds, they don't have any use for dollars or rupees or pounds or whatever. You know, they can't use them in the afterworld, because they don't have shops that accept rupees. The only thing of value in those worlds is merit, because these are worlds that are primarily composed of karma. They are primarily composed of karma. And a karma comes in two forms, good and bad. Ping and Pao. The reason that they've been born in those worlds is because, in the woeful plains, is because they have done potentially more bad than good. So now they don't have the currency to expend through which they can earn a living. Because they don't have shops, they don't have offices and jobs to go and do in those worlds. They just live on the merit that they have acquired. If there is enough merit, they get to eat. If there's no merit, no food. If there's enough merit, then they get to clothe themselves. If there's no merit, then no clothes. Be nude. So this is why we transfer merit, and this is also why we invite those beings to join us, to witness this meritorious deed. That's the first thing we say. Not let them be able to understand this Dhamma. At least let them be able to witness this meritorious deed. Let them witness you offering flowers to the Buddha. Just the sight of the Buddha is enough for them to acquire lots of merit. And that merit might then help them to be born in the blissful plane, as a human, or a deva, or a brahma. And then once they're there, provided they can listen to the Dhamma, they have the power of hearing. Now, that's why we finally say, may they now be able to listen to this sermon, understand what it is that we speak of, and be able to comprehend the Dhamma. So was that a wasted 10 minutes? If you knew for certain that your parents have been born in the woeful plain, I guarantee that you would rather that I spend all 2 hours of our sermon inviting them and making sure that they have every opportunity to receive these merits, and spend the last half an hour really delivering this sermon to you. If you knew that your parents, who are perhaps no longer with you, have been born in the woeful plains and they're able to witness this, that's what you'd wish for. Because there, it's not the lack of Dhamma that's the problem. For us, it's the lack of Dhamma. There, it's the lack of merit that's the problem. Because Dhamma is not going to help them solve that problem. In the woeful plains, what's the point of Dhamma? What's the point? If you can't understand it, what's the point? I'm going to speak to you in French. Okay, some of you might know it. I'm going to speak to you in Russian. Anyone know Russian? Okay, what's the point? Likewise, the Dhamma is pointless in the woeful plane. That's why the Buddha was not born in the Apayas. That's why the Buddha's descent, the Buddha's advent is into the blissful plane. Because that's the lowest plane where someone can listen to the Dhamma and understand it. And then all these things that we do, like offering flowers, they have a very profound meaning behind them. And I'll share some of that with you. Because all of this is useful stuff. Because otherwise what people might think is, you know, why do we waste money, effort, you know, all this? What's the point? Even benefactors, like you, right? They might begin to wonder, is this what we offered the money to the monastery for? To do this? What's the point? To do that? What's the point? Someone might feel that way. I'm not saying you do, but there are lots of people listening to these sermons, either live or recorded sermons, so on and so forth. And people to whom, you know, making offerings like this is new, right? For them, it's valid for them to ask the question, why do we do this? Flowers. In the Buddha Shasana, there's nothing that we do just because. Just for the sake of it. Everything has meaning, and everything has profound meaning if we are willing to consider. That's what I said at the beginning. Just be prepared to consider. Don't accept, consider. Don't be a good follower, be a good student. A student doesn't follow, a student considers. They study, they analyze, they reflect. A follower, whatever you say, sir, three bags full, sir. Who says that? Baba, black, sheep. Are you sheep? No. So don't say three bags full, sir. What do I mean? Just because I say so, don't say yes, Swami Mohan, sir. Sheep say that. So offering flowers. Flowers grow on trees. Why do trees need flowers? Do they need them, or do they just, you know, it's just coincidence that flowers grow on trees? Why do trees need flowers? Why do plants need flowers? Yes. For? Reproduction. And what is the purpose of flowers in the reproduction purpose, in the reproduction process? What do flowers do? It attracts. This is a magnet for bees and other insects. Come on. It's time for business. The shop is open. That's what the tree says. Because it hasn't got a voice, this is how the tree says, I am now ready to reproduce. So beautiful and pretty flowers bloom. And their fragrance is spread all over, everywhere. So there are insects who, most of them really don't know what their purpose is. What do the bees think the flowers are there for? For honey. That's why you also go and call the other person, hey honey. Because what do you think they are there for? To provide you with honey, right? So you think. The bees go to the tree for honey because they think this honey is for me. That's the purpose of a flower, to provide me with honey. That's what bees think. Ask the tree. Ask the tree. What's the tree gonna say? I don't care one bit for the bees. My whole purpose in making such effort, in using all the energy that I have been able to acquire to bloom these flowers, is for what? To help the reproduction purpose, process. I want to reproduce. I want to make more of me. And even plants have a me. I want to make more of me. That's the purpose of these beautiful flowers, with their colors, their vibrant colors, and their aromatic fragrances. So this is all an invitation. Come ye all ye faithful. All come here. Come to me. And so all the bees and flies and whatever, those insects, they fly towards the flower, attracted by the colors and the smell of the honey. Now while they spend their time on the flower, what's the flower doing? It's getting all those spores on the animal's body. Does the bee know this? No, the bee doesn't know this. And then the bee flies to another flower. And then it drops the spores that the bee collected from the first flower. And now the reproduction process has kick-started. Germination takes place. So, likewise, all these things that we see in the world that are beautiful, people, objects, what is their purpose for being? Why do people go through the process of producing beautiful things? What are some of the beautiful things around us? Some pretty things, lovely things. What are some of the beautiful and lovely things that we get to see in our lives? TV? Not beautiful? Yes. How many channels do you have on your TV set? Well, you know the answer. That's okay, you don't have to say it out loud. Is TV, watching TV a sin? No. So it's okay. Sabba papa sakarana, that's all. Don't do any unwholesome deeds. That's the only thing I say, don't do. Everything else, it will happen eventually. Don't rush. It will happen eventually. Some of the beautiful things that we have, all these various types of food that people go through, make the effort to produce. How many different types of rice do we have now? Those days it was just white rice and red rice. Now, there's biryani, there's fried rice. What else? You should know. So many different types of rice, right? How many different types of ways can you cook dal? Many. Lots of different types. All this for what? Why does someone go through the effort, go through the trouble, input, you know, go through this exercise of bringing in something a little bit more better, a little bit better, a little bit more beautiful, a little bit more exciting than the one that was there before? It's to foster the self. Because someone's self depends on you consuming that. Remember, consumers and suppliers. Ultimately, that's all there is. A guy finds a girl attractive, just the same as a bee finds the flower attractive. Does the bee know why the flower is attractive? What's the real purpose behind it? No. The flower doesn't care, the tree doesn't care one bit about the bee. All it's doing is helping the bee, or helping the tree, helping that plant reproduce. A guy finds a girl attractive. Now you fill in the rest. A girl finds a guy attractive. You fill in the rest. Consumers and suppliers. The thing is, sometimes we don't know that we've become consumers. That could be dangerous. Because if the bee falls for the trap that this flower is there purely for my existence, the reason that this flower came into the world is for me, now there's a strong bond that is created there. This is for me. Me and mine. That's the notion that the bee comes to after that. And then if another bee comes along, bugger off. That's my flower. just like humans. Bugger off, she's mine. So this is one aspect that we have to begin to see with flowers. Why are flowers beautiful then? We need to understand, we need to reflect on ourselves. Evang upasangharati. Look at nature, look at the world around you, and look at and try to understand the Dhamma by looking at them and contemplating on them. This is the Buddha's teaching, not something I came up with. So looking at a flower, looking at the beautiful colors on the flower, looking at being able to smell that beautiful fragrances of the flower. Now reflect on ourselves. For those of you who are still in your young ages, think about yourselves. Am I not like this flower? Right now I'm quite attractive, or at least I think so. Other people have say so. They admire my beauty just as much as I admire the beauty of this flower. But the reason that this flower is beautiful, and the reason that other people say that this flower is beautiful, is really not because they love me. It's because from the flower they are able to receive the rupa, shabda, gandha, rasa, sparsha that they like. That's why one guy does not look at two girls and say they're both pretty. One's always prettier than the other, because one's able to provide what it is that this guy likes to consume better than the other. Are you following me? There's always one girl prettier than the other. There are no two girls who are equally pretty. One's always prettier than the other. Unless perhaps they're identical twins. Then I'll have both, please. So likewise, the reason, you know, to reflect on your image, your beauty. Again, beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. See, all this to contemplate on. Someone says you're pretty, and that's because to them you're pretty. The next day someone might come up to you and say, you look disgusting. Look at the way you wear your hair. That doesn't look pretty at all. You know, people like white flowers, people like purple flowers. Others like red. Others like daffodils, and some like roses. Some like jasmines. All lies in the eyes of the beholder. Likewise, when we make offerings to the Buddha, when we lay that flower on the altar, come to our senses. Understand that this flower looks pretty to me. That's not because the flower is pretty. Beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. This flower looks pretty to me. Therefore, this flower should not fall into the... should not be foolish enough to think that, oh, you know, he's just plucked me, she's just plucked me and brought me to offer to the Buddha, so I must be really pretty. The flower must never think like that, should it? No. Because is the flower really pretty? No, because beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. So likewise, when you make that offering, either to the Buddha, or, you know, it doesn't matter where you make the flower offering. Contemplate now. I look at the mirror and I see a pretty image. Others do say that I'm pretty. My boyfriend texts me every morning. Hey, pretty thing. Hey, gorgeous. He finds me gorgeous, not because I'm gorgeous. He finds me gorgeous. Because beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. So is beauty an attribute of this figure? Is beauty an attribute of this form? No. It's a very subjective thing. So if that is the nature of... if that is the true nature of beauty, if that is the true nature of this rupa, then aren't I foolish to fall into the trap to think that I am a pretty thing? I am beautiful? Aren't I foolish to come to that sense? See? This is what we ought to think. And again, the tree bears flowers not for the benefit of the bee. Again, think about it, you know, if you really think about it in a very subtle way, If you think you look pretty, you know, in conventional sense, in a conventional sense, right? If you think you look pretty, that's because it's the reward of a good merit that you've done in the past. That's one aspect. Right? Prettiness comes with as a reward for merit you've done in the past. Now, isn't merit something that helps us to relieve ourselves from suffering? If you've done good, if you've done charity in the past, then you will receive. You give and you will receive, right? So if you've given in the past, then you will receive. You might receive food, money, clothing, shelter, so on and so forth, such that you can relieve yourself from suffering. Now, think about it. If beauty is a reward for good deeds you've done in the past, then what is this good look, this beauty you have received for? What is it for? To help you now relieve yourself from suffering quicker. How so? Because now people find you attractive. It's now easier to find a supplier. Oh, good heavens. That's all it is. You've just made a good product. So now it's easier to find you have a good product that you can now sell. Because consumer supplier, you know, reverse the roles, again, it's consumer supplier. You're supplying, someone else is consuming, they're consuming, you're supplying. It works both ways. And this is why, you know, true, when they say that good beauty is the reward of good merit you've done in the past, that is absolutely true. Is it easier to hand a girl off in marriage if she's pretty or if she's ugly? If she's pretty. But is prettiness or ugliness an attribute of the woman? No. But it lies in the eyes of the beholder, right? But it's because of good merit that she's been born that way. Why so? Because now it's easier for that person to relieve themselves from suffering. But it can work the other way as well. Someone who's very pretty might attract unwelcome interest as well. You know, if you're really, 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 really ugly, then no one might be interested in abusing you. But good looks can come to our harm. That will be the bad deed, a bad deed that we've done in the past. Again, coming back and paying reward. So you see, when you begin to consider these things, you begin to realize, what is the point of beauty then? All this is for is just to be able to relieve myself from suffering. But does good looks bear any relation on how quickly you can attain Nibbana? No. That has nothing to do with it. But in terms of how successful that you can be in this world? Now yes. It's easier to get a job if you're pretty, aren't you? Isn't it? What to do? This is the truth that I have to speak to you. I don't like speaking these things, but this is the truth. This is reality. It's easier to ask a favor if you have good looks. It's easier to ask for a discount. Walk to a shop. Can you give me a discount? No, not for you. You walk away, a younger model comes in. Can I ask for a discount? Yes, how much would you like, madam? I'll bring it to your doorstep. To relieve yourself from suffering. So offering that those flowers at the feet of the Buddha, all these things are things you can think about. You see, a lot of Dhamma. So it's not just the action of putting a flower at the Buddha's feet. Now, one more thing though. Why at his feet though? Why do you not put it on his hand? Why the feet? Because what do we do with our feet? We step. When you throw something and you really don't like the look of it, what do? You step on it. So you don't have to ever see it again. You step on it, you break it, you crush it, you throw it away. It's a mark of disgust. So when we make that offering at the Buddha's feet, We contemplate on the fact that the Buddha was someone who realized that this karma worlds, rupa karma, shabda karma, gandha karma, rasa karma, potappa karma, dhamma karma. You know, this karma you equate, this sensuality you equate to the beauty and the fragrance of the flower. He discarded them. He didn't praise them. He only found fault with them. He dispelled them. He stepped on them. He treaded on them. He said, discard them, throw away. Karma is not good for us. Sensuality is not something that is worth having. It's something that has to be discarded, shun away. And that's why we make that offering at his feet. What is the stanza you recite when you offer flowers? And there's another one. Vanna gandha gunopetam. Vanna gandha gunopetam. Varna, flower, is the color. Gandha, the smell. Gunopetam, upama. This is the simile. Guna upama, gunopetam. Like the smell and the color, varna gandha. I use these two as a simile. Vanna gandha gunopetam, etam kusuma santatin. Santatin. Etam kusuma. What do we think kusuma is here? Flower? That's one meaning. Ku. Ku sung. Ku is what? Evil, bad. Remember kusal? What is doing kusal? Ku, kunu, salaharino. Ku sung, sung kalladana. To dispel, to disregard, to throw away, to throw away. Ku sung, etang kusuma santatin. Chitta santane is the mind. Santane. Sitta, this is the mind that is spoken of there. Vanna gandha gunopetam etam kusuma santatin. Pujayami munindassa siripada saroruhe. In fact, saroruhe is actually the flower, not the kusuma. These are flowers that, you know, in those days, you to pick flowers, you had to go to the lake where flowers used to grow, and you know, so saroruhe are flowers that grow in the lake. Vanna gandha gunopetam etam kusuma santatin. So my mind, I rid of the defilements, I rid my mind of the cankers, of the 10 unwholesome deeds. Like what? And instill in this mind good qualities, like the fragrance and the beauty of the Buddha, not the figure, again the qualities. Like the fragrance and the beauty of the Buddha's qualities, I try to instill those values in my mind by discarding, shunning away and dispelling the defilements that were in my mind previously. Pujyami munindasta. Muninda. Who? The Buddha. Pujayami. I offer. Puja. Pujayami munindasa siripada. At his feet. And these flowers. So when you make that offering of flowers, it's a contemplation. I recognize that in my mind there are defilements that incline me towards evil deeds, evil thoughts and evil actions. So made through this offering, made through the merits that I acquired through this offering, I be able to shun those defilements, those cankers which take over my mind, and be able to instill good, great qualities, beautify my mind, make my mind fragrant with good and great qualities. That is the true offering of flowers in the Arya Vinaya. There's the conventional sense. I bring flowers. Flowers are beautiful. Flowers are going to die in a moment. So likewise, I'm going to pass away. My body is going to wither just like flowers do. Nothing wrong. That is also correct. You can do that as well. But remember, we're not just talking about the physicality here. In the Arya Vinaya, we talk about the mind. Because the physical problem, we don't need to fix. That will fix itself. But the mental problem, that has to be fixed. Then, incense. When you offer incense or joss-sticks, there's a very profound meaning behind that. You see, Ashley, have you never thought about this? Something that just sprang to mind. When you observe Atasil, isn't there a precept that says, that goes like, Mala Gandha Vilepana Dharana Mandana Vibhusana Attana Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhyami? So, Mala Gandha. Okay? That's flowers and incense. Vilepana, these are things that you apply on your body. Dharana Mandana, things that you might wear on your body, like ornaments and things like that, jewelry and things like that. Vibhusanattana Veramani. I discard them, I put them away, because these are not things that are worthwhile. And the reason for that also, I think I explained to you in a previous sermon. Really, what? Because one might think, why does the Buddha restrict our freedom like this? I'm not even a monk, I've just come to observe the 8 precepts, and the Buddha has given me a precept that says I shouldn't smell good, I shouldn't wear good, nice jewelry. Why does the Buddha say that? I shouldn't dance, I shouldn't sing. Why is that? Isn't that restricting my freedom? When he's the leader of liberation, when he's the epitome of liberation, why does he speak of limiting ourselves and restricting ourselves? The question that might come to your mind. Sir? Beg your pardon? It is the way of the Arahant. But we are all still in training. So it's one thing to pretend to be an Arahant. But on the path to become an Arahant, these are things that are naturally shed away. But until such time, again, within this precept, there's something to think about. Remember, I gave you the example of, you wear jewelry. Okay, imagine it's a chain, a necklace you wear on your neck. You only see this before you leave home when you stand in front of the mirror. From that point forwards, who enjoys the beauty of that necklace? You or people who look at you? People who look at you. What about your earrings? Who observes the beauty? You or the people that look at you? People that look at you, right? What about, okay, let's say you like to dance. You get on the stage, you go through practice, day and night and afternoon, you practice, and then finally, event day comes and now you're on the stage dancing. Who's doing the hard work? Who's just sat there and enjoying it? You went through the practice. You went through all the hard work, sleepless nights, whether it's singing or dancing or whatever, right? To make happy whom? Yourself or the world? The world. They just sat there with their eyes and ears open and then just looking at you. Just like wearing that jewelry. Who's got to now protect the jewelry? You. But who enjoys its beauty? Somebody else. Who has to go through training and singing and dancing? You. But who enjoys that? Somebody else. What the Buddha really says is, don't sacrifice your freedom for somebody else. Don't sacrifice your happiness. Don't exert yourself uselessly for somebody else. Because ultimately, what are you giving them? Just Rupa Shabda Gandha Rasa Sparsha? Things that are going to redeem themselves from suffering? No. Preach as much Dhamma as you like. There's no problem with that. Why? Because that helps them to redeem themselves from suffering. But is listening to music or watching dances or looking at jewelry a true way to redeem oneself from suffering? No. Then for someone to stand on a stage and start singing? Relief from suffering, not redemption from suffering. It's not going to cure the problem. So that's why the Buddha says, what's the point of doing it? Stop doing that. Pointless. So it's not really restricting your freedom. It's saying, think what you're doing. How is this helping you? You've come here to observe the Noble Eightfold Path and walk the Noble Eightfold Path. How is bearing fragrance or flowers or jewelry or dancing or singing, how is that going to help you? No. Well, then why are you doing it? This is what he asks. Right, so let's go back to the incense. Now, if you considered that, the question that must come to your mind is, well, for the Buddha to come up with a precept where he says, Mala Gandha Vilepana Vibhusanatana Veramani, he says, you know, remove yourself from that. Why does he then expect you to go and offer incense to him? That's also Gandha. Have you not seen people who light incense and then, you know, do, I don't know what you call it, make an offering to the Buddha, like, you know, put it on some kind of stand and then hold the smoke around his body like you do at the Deval, at the Kovil, offering the smell to the Buddha. When the Buddha says, Mala Gandha Veramani, pointless. For someone who seeks no happiness through smell, for someone as the Buddha who realizes, who understands fully that there is no happiness to be sought in sights or smells, what is the point in us offering the smell of an incense to the Buddha? Ever considered? Well, it's time to think then. And even actually, you know, something I used to, I noticed, you know, I think the last 5 or so years, you know, people have now come up with mixed incense. You know, those days used to be the same fragrance throughout, but now it's mixed. Now you have different smells. They think they're offering the Buddha. Who are you really trying to please by lighting incense? Again, by the way, I'm not saying don't light incense at home or anywhere, okay? Please, this is only for intelligent, wise people. If you're not intelligent and wise, don't listen to this. So if you're listening to this, then I will assume that you're intelligent and you're wise. Is that a fair assumption? Okay, you're saying so. I asked the question. Okay? Right. Because I don't want to take any liberties here. I asked the question, you said yes, so I shall continue. You know, people now mix incense and they make these offerings. Again, offering smell to the Buddha. When the Buddha says, Mala Gandha Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhyami. So we've got to think. Really what we should be doing is reflecting on how is it that an incense stick helps me to progress on this noble path. What is the profundity of this teaching? What is the profoundness of this act that I'm doing? So let's think about that. When you light an incense, as we know, this incense spreads a nice sweet fragrance. This incense is really having a dialogue with you. The incense is asking you a question, a series of questions. And you are now required to answer this interview. It's an interview. So the incense asks you, hey mister, or miss, or madam, look at me. From the moment I was lit, I spread nothing but a nice sweet fragrance to all around me. There's no one that complains of the smell that comes from an incense stick. It's very sweet, it's very nice, it's very enjoyable. Are you like that? The words that flow freely out of your mouth, do people complain? Are they harsh words? Or are they words that people like to hear? When you speak, do people close their ears? Or are they willing? Are they happy to listen to you speak? Are they always looking to see what else you might say? Or are people wishing that that's the last thing you're going to say? Are you like me? The incense stick asks you this question. Now it's time for you to answer. Are you one that has refrained yourself from the unwholesome deeds that happen through speech? Musavada, Pisunavacha, Parushavacha, Sampraprapralapa, lying, harsh words, backstabbing, frivolous speech. Are you one who has abstained from them, or are you one who still indulges in them? Well, if your answer is yes, I'm one who still indulges in them, then you and I, we are very different, aren't we? The incense stick asks you. Now, if the answer to that is yes, then you're going to have to feel quite shameful. Here's an inanimate object asking you, are you better or am I better? It's an inanimate object that has no life. And it's asking you a question. And you're going, actually, you know what? You're better than me. And you're just cow dung rolled up around a stick. I'm a living, breathing human being and I'm no better than you. That would be shameful to answer like that, wouldn't it? And the incense stick says, well, I spread this fragrance all over me. The thoughts that I think are always pleasant ones. I wish metta on everybody. I wish happiness on everybody. But what about you? What are your thoughts like? Do you wish harm, evil on others? Are you kind to others? Are you generous to others? Is your presence welcome or is your presence unwelcome? An incense stick asks you, what answer do you have to give? And then there's more. Now, to light an incense stick, of course, you need to hold it to a fire. And that's why today I lit it against the oil lamp without asking for a matchbox from you, because I wanted to give that symbol to you. I don't know if you took it, but I was giving you a message. Because an incense stick cannot light by itself. It needs help. It needs light. It needs that fire from something else. From somebody else. Just like this light of wisdom has to come from somebody else. So holding that incense stick to the fire, you light it up. But from the moment it is lit, that's the moment at which the fragrance starts to disperse in the air. But before that, no. Before that, there was no fragrance coming from the incense stick. You had to go really up close to smell it, hold it against your nose. Then you might have been able to smell the nice smell that comes from it. But standing away, you wouldn't be able to smell it. Likewise, as humans, all of you all have good qualities within yourselves. But so far, it might be that you didn't have the right channel to direct it in. When you come in front of a noble person, once you start to associate a noble person, and the light of wisdom is lit within your minds, now you begin to disperse that aromatic, that sweet smell all over the world. Because now you become an Arya. Before that, you were a good person. Now you're a great person. Because now you have started to walk the path to Nibbana. But that light had to come from another source. It had to come from a source that had wisdom to begin with. I'll come to the oil lamp in a moment. We're still talking about the incense stick. So from the moment this incense stick was lit, now it's burning away. As it burns away, the fragrance spreads everywhere. And we are able to enjoy that. That fragrance, that sweet smell. It makes everyone happy. It pleases everybody. But as it burns, what's left over? Ashes. Ashes are left over as this fragrance stick burns away. Again, this incense stick asks you a question. As I am lit, as I am now burning, and I'm spreading this fragrance smell all over, I'm becoming shorter. I have something that's becoming shorter. I am becoming shorter. Do you have something that is becoming shorter? Is there something in you that is reducing with every moment since the moment that this fire, that this light, that this fire lit? What is burning away? Raga, Dvesha, Moha. On the incense? It's cow dung. Stuff that you have to discard. Right? Stuff that we have to discard. I mean, I don't know what people make incense stick out of now these days. But, you know, our ancestors, you know, they used cow dung, naturally sourced products, to make them. You know, why? Because so much to think about. So much to think about. You know, really, if you want to properly offer flowers and incense and an oil lamp, you know, you could spend a couple of hours there easily. Just sitting down after you've done that and sit down and contemplate, what have I done right now? Am I like that? Because in the Buddha Shasana, everything is about pratipatti. That's why I think last week I explained to you pratipatti and amisa. In the Buddha Shasana, there is no amisa. It's all pratipatti. This is all what we do. It's practice. So the incense stick says, since this fire was lit, I am burning away. Is there something you're burning away? And you better had say, it's raga, dvesha, moha. If you can say that, then great. And then the incense stick says, oh, well, then we are similar, aren't we? But if you say, not really, then we are not very much same, are we? We're quite different, aren't we? Again, an inanimate object is better than you. What a pity. And what's left over is the ashes. These are the defilements that you shed away. These are the defilements that you shed away, never to come back. Because the moment you become a sotapanna, that's the moment when that incense stick is lit, that's the moment you become an Arya. Three of the dasa sanyojana, sakkaya ditthi, vichikicca, silabbata, paramasa, goes away, never to come back again. Like the ashes that have burnt away, never to come back. Can you put the ashes together and make another incense stick out of it? No. Keep burning. Kamaraga, vyapada, patika goes away. At the stage you become an anagami. And then again the incense stick asks you, well, I recognize that I'm giving this beautiful, this lovely fragrance to everybody and pleasing everybody around me, but I'm not here to stay. The purpose I went and lit myself was so that I could bring my stay to an end. How many people have really forgotten that? Lay as well as clergy. A lot of people, once they receive the Dhamma, potentially not people who have become noble ones, then their purpose in life becomes to spread the Dhamma. But they take very little from it. Oh, what a pity. These are the people that the Buddha used to say, refer to as tuccha. Tuccha Potila being an example. Their life's ambition then becomes to spread the Dhamma, not taking much for themselves. That was not why the Buddha gave his teaching. It was for self-liberation before the liberation of others. So this is where the incense stick says, look at me. I'm not just giving away fragrance and being there forever. I'm burning myself away every moment. Are you doing the same? It asks. Are you burning away these defilements so that you ultimately come to the end of that little bit of a stick that's at the end of it? And then all that's left over at the end is this dead body? Is your ambition to be here forever? See? And then it's time for you to answer that question. If your answer is, well, you know what? I'm quite fragrant and people are quite nice to me and I'm quite nice to them, you know, this is a really good way to be, isn't it? Because I'm not doing any harm to anybody. So I might as well hang around for as long as I can. The incense stick says, oh, you've got it all wrong, mister. Now, how much time can you spend in front of an incense stick? All that to think about, all that to contemplate on. Then let's move on to the oil lamp. Because when offering flowers, ladies and gentlemen, you know, through that process, through that activity, you recognize the importance of sila, having virtue within you. Because this is about recognizing that this karma world is pointless, useless, essenceless, meaningless. It's not there for my benefit. It's simply there to fulfill a purpose. All of this is all of these are rewards that I have that I am able to reap because of merit I've done in the past. But I should not be foolish to think that, oh, look at me, I'm so beautiful. I might as well make the most of it. Because when people fall into that frame of mind, what do? They begin to abuse their own beauty. Abuse themselves and abuse others. You know, just think for yourselves how much people use beauty to prepare a trap for other people. Using the beauty that you have been gifted as a reward for merit you've done in the past and for nothing else, just so you can relieve yourself from suffering easier. How many people use that as an arm against other people? To lure other people into traps? To ignite the fires of desire in other people? People don't recognize. They don't realize how much demerit they acquire by doing that. Just think for a moment, whether it could be a Swami once, it could be a yogi, a recluse, an ascetic, who has sought solitude from the world, and he spends his time trying to fight with these defilements in his mind, trying to conquer his mind and do away with raga, dvesha, moha. But someone comes along, I'll just use an example of a young lady comes along, and now she uses her assets, which she thinks they are, to lure this yogi, lure this Swamin Mahansa into a trap. Does that deliberately? I mean, of course, intention has to be there, otherwise it's not a bad deed. But if there is intention, look at me, Trump exposing themselves in inappropriate ways to lure the yogi, lure that Swamin Mahansa into a trap. Isn't that abusing what you have received because of merit you've done in the past, simply for no other reason than relieving yourself from suffering? To relieve yourself from suffering, what are you just doing to the other person? Putting them into the fires, into the pangs of suffering. Where do you think that's going to lead them? People don't think. Especially, I think, you know, a lot of young people have to listen to these sermons. At least what I just said there. Parents, you know, show the reality of this to your children. Because without realizing what they're doing, sometimes they cause themselves and everyone else a lot of harm. The incense stick is upright. It's not bent. There are no bends or curves in an incense stick. It's upright. It asks you the question, is your samadhi like mine? I'm upright. Are you like that? Have you done away with all your bad deeds, your defilements? Are you a Riju person or a Vanka person? You know the word Avanka, right? What is Vanka? To be bent. Bent towards what? Inclined towards what? The unwholesome deeds. Bent not upwards, bent downwards. What's down there? Well, you know. Avanka. Upright. Forthright. Are you like me? The incense stick asks. How can you stand in front of that, having done unwholesome deeds, be honest to yourself and answer a yes when you do that? You should feel shameful if you have lied, if you have stolen, if you have engaged in sensual misconduct. Standing in front of an incense stick, you should feel shameful. Moving to the oil lamp. Usually what we use to light an oil lamp is the wick, which is usually white in color. But what this wick we use for, what we use this wick for is to light a fire. Although the wick is white in color, it looks harmless, what it's used for is to light a fire that could burn. You can, there are lots of different meanings you can give to this. I'm just using one here. Then you can think of others. None of that is wrong. As long as it's the meaning that you get out of that is inclined towards raga ke, desha ke, moha ke, then you're fine. But if you look at an incense stick and go, oh, you know, that's a lovely fragrance. I should be like an incense stick from now. So from now on, I'm going to get myself a really nice perfume and then apply that all over my body. And then wherever I go, I'm going to smell like an incense stick. Now, that's not raga ke, desha ke, moha ke. So provided the meaning that you excerpt from these are to do with Nibbana, you're fine. That's all we need to concern ourselves about. So while the wick is white in color, that can be deceiving. It would be foolish to think that a wick is harmless. Because what is the wick used for? To light a fire that can burn and destroy, bring destruction. But the thing is, the wick doesn't do that by itself. You need oil, and you need the oxygen that's in the air. Now, when did an oil lamp burn out because there wasn't any more air to burn? Ever happened? No, there's plenty of air. There's always air. There's plenty of air around us. Well, of course, you could put it into an airtight box and then, you know, that's a different story. But we're just talking about under normal circumstances. Unless there's a wind, under normal circumstances, provided there's air, the wick's going to keep burning. So the air around us are like these thoughts that come into our minds. Thoughts that come from everywhere. Thoughts that are the results of deeds that we've done in the past. What brings a sight in front of your eyes? A kamma or vipaka? Vipaka. This is a result of a deed you've done in the past. What brings a sound to your ear? Kamma or vipaka. That's vipaka. Of a kamma that was done in the past. It could have been just the moment before. And past doesn't necessarily mean previous births. Could have been the moment before. Likewise, what brings a thought to your mind? Kamma or vipaka. Vipaka. Manancha dhammecha, chakkuncha rupecha, sotanta sabbecha, and so on and so forth. To all these faculties, these outside rupa, shabda, gandha, rasa, sparsha, dhamma, they come to us as vipaka of deeds that were done in the past. So that's like the air, there's plenty of it. But this wick that's in the oil lamp is like the chitta that has avidya. So in fact, the wick is the mind that is clean to begin with. The mind is free of defilements. At its root, the mind is free of defilements. But through avidya and tanha, this mind gets wetted. It gets wet with avidya and tanha, ignorance and attachment. And now what happens is when those thought objects come from the outside world, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, what ignites there? The fires of raga, dvesha, and moha. The mind is clean for all of us. That is the case. This is why once you remove the defilements, what you are left with is a clean mind. What you are left with is a taintless mind. And a taintless clean mind is not something we have to import from Russia or somewhere else. You have, each of us have one. What we ought to do is remove the defilements that have been put on top of it. Remove those defilements and what you're left with is a clean mind, a taintless mind. Taintless mind. So likewise in the oil lamp, the problem is not the wick, the problem is not the air, but the problem is the oil that has now wetted this wick that's clean. But what happens is with every moment that passes, oil keeps being dragged along the wick. And also, by the way, where did this fire come from to begin with? From another oil lamp. Right? This fire came from usually another oil lamp. at least another source of fire. Fire only came from another source of fire. Like what? Exactly. I'm very pleased that you now have all these answers at the tip of your tongues, because it just means that, you know, you're all listening to this and you're all really trying to understand what it is we are saying. It comes from another Asat Purusha. It was another fire that lit this fire. But at every moment, this Raga, Dvesha, Moha, the fires of Raga, Dvesha, Moha are lit. This wick is burnt away. Poor wick, right? It was clean, pure to begin with. Don't you feel sorry for the wick? Burning itself? It's burning itself. If there wasn't any oil that this wick was dipped in, would that fire from the other oil lamp had lit this? Would it have lit this lamp? If there was no oil? No. Well, there was still air. Take a wick, no oil. Try and light it with another wick. Not going to happen. Might be just the tip. But if you want to take the meaning behind what I'm trying to explain here, you know, you can't light an entire wick if there's no oil. No matter how many oil lamps you're going to bring, it needs the oil to continue for that fire to light, and then for that fire to keep burning the wick. So this is the contemplation that you can do when you light this oil lamp. As you light that lamp, you can think to yourself, this is what Asat Purusha did to me. Association with immoral, ignoble people. This is what happened to me. This is your story. You're relating your story to the Buddha. Oh Lord Buddha, this is what happened to me. Light a fire, hold it to the oil lamp. In your mind, you're saying to the Buddha, Buddha, Lord Buddha, I seek refuge in you because this is what happened to me. I need your help to put out this fire. See? Now tell me that oil lighting an oil lamp is a waste of time. Tell me now, if you can, that offering flowers to the Buddha is a waste of time. Why do you offer it to the Buddha? What is the answer to all these problems? Buddha. Bhava. Uddha. To uproot this existence at its very source. That is the answer to all these problems. So you take your problem to one who has the answer. Well, who else are you going to take this problem to? You have to go to the doctor. Who else are you going to take this problem to? You have a backache. Who do you take it to? The butcher? All he knows to do is cut your back off. No? You'll not live another day to say what your problem is. You have to take it to the doctor who has the problem, who has the answer to your problem. One who has been through the course of those problems and had treated himself. This is why you light them in front of the Buddha. You are my only refuge. The Dhamma is my only refuge because the Dhamma sprang in your mind. The Dhamma sprang in your heart. Through the compassion that you had in your heart for all human beings, for all divine beings, for all celestial beings, for every being that ever lived, that lives, and forever to live. It is because of that compassion this Dhamma sprang in your mind. And it's because of you we have the gift of the Mahasangha today. If it was not for our Father, you wouldn't be sat in front of me right now. I wouldn't be in a robe right now if it wasn't for the Buddha. In the conventional sense, what about the absolute sense? Who are Sangha in the absolute sense? Sotapanna, Sakurdagamis, Anagamis, Arahants. Atta Purusa Puggala. Path and fruit. 4 times 2, 8. Atta Purusa Puggala. Does that have to be men? Can it not be women? Of course. Does it only have to be, can it only be humans? Can it not be devas? Of course. Brahmas? Of course. Dogs? No. For as long as this seed of the Four Noble Truths has been planted in your hearts and in your minds, never to be uprooted again, you are a member of the Mahasangha. It doesn't matter whether you're in lay clothes or you're in robes, in the absolute sense. Now, don't expect everyone to come and worship at your feet. Don't expect everyone to give you a free meal every day. For that, you have to come to the conventional Sangha. You have to enter into, you have to go forth, come into robes. That requires an extra level of letting go. But you see, conventional Sangha, letting go is something you have to do. Absolute Sangha, letting go happens. Just because you've donned robes doesn't mean you are a member of the Absolute Sangha. Once you become a Sotapanna, now you are a member of the Absolute Sangha. It doesn't matter whether you live in a 6-bedroom, 7-bedroom, 10-bedroom palace. Doesn't matter. But don't expect people to come and give you a free meal. You see how much meaning there is in making these offerings? And to the Buddha, why we do that to the Buddha? So, I think someone asked me the other day, why do we make all these decorations? Why do we go through the effort of doing all this? And a very valid question. I'm really glad that the question got raised. Because it's important to understand. Because this is an offering to me? No. Oh, please. It's an offering to the Dhamma. I seek the Buddha's permission to speak his Dhamma before I stand up. That's why I worship him 3 times. I've said this to you in the past. My first worship is to his infinite wisdom, to his infinite virtue, his infinite concentration and his infinite wisdom. Sila, Samadhi, Prajna. It's infinite, beyond compare, beyond my wildest imagination. I cannot begin to compare or comprehend the limit of that. That's what my first worship is for. My second is to seek his permission, because he is the master, he is the proprietor. Like I said at the start, I am just the vehicle. I am not the master of the Dhamma, he is the master. So I seek his permission to speak the Dhamma after I sit on this seat. And then my third veneration is, I make a firm resolve that through the course of this sermon, may you all be able to understand this Dhamma. May you all who are like parents to me. It's because of you today I'm not hungry. It's because of you I'm clad in a robe. I didn't earn this for myself. You gave this in charity. It's because of you I'm in a shelter today. It's because of you I'm speaking to a microphone. Otherwise I'd have to shout my guts out for you all to be able to hear this. It's because of you. It's because of you when I'm ill. I have medicine. I have treatment. I don't make a living today to go and treat myself. You are there, just like my parents were there for me throughout 30 years of my life, feeding me, caring for me, protecting me, clothing me, sheltering me. Through thick and thin, they were always there. Much the same way you're all here. That's my third veneration. I make a firm resolve, I make a wish, I make a prayer in front of the Buddha. May all my parents, you, mothers and fathers, be able to understand this Dhamma. Just like I promised my parents, I will redeem you from this samsara when I left home. Now you are all my parents. That is my third veneration. So these flowers, these decorations are a mark for the Dhamma. It's the Dhamma that I preach once I sit on this seat. Doesn't matter who sat here. It could be a lay person, it could be clergy. Doesn't matter. It's the Dhamma that we begin to preach. So this mark of respect is to the Dhamma. Again, why? Because it's the Dhamma that's the key to our liberation. It's the Dhamma that's the key to our emancipation. The Buddha showed us where the key was. We picked it up. Now, Dharyata, we have the key. The Buddha showed us. Sunata, listen, look, there's the key. Now pick it up. I picked it up. Now, Dharyata. Then, unlock. That you have to do yourself. The Buddha is not going to come and snatch the key out of your hand and unlock it for you. He did it himself and then he walked the path. Now he's gone. But he left behind instructions. On 57 books worth of instruction. Whole 57 volumes of instruction. Every tiny bit of detail, whether you have to go left 10 degrees or 11 degrees. To that detail, level of detail he described, this is where you'll find the key. Once you pick it up, now unlock the door. That you have to do yourself. Seeking help of others who are trying to do it for themselves. And that is the Mahasangha. Once you open the door, then you walk. Then you don't hang around. Because the fires of samsara are still catching up. The tsunamis of samsara are catching up. The longer you wait here, then the closer it gets. Once you walk the path, then from that point forward, it doesn't matter. Because for after that point, ladies and gentlemen, death is not something that causes you fear. Then you become fearless of death. You become fearless of aging. You become fearless of disease. Fearless. Come, so what? Suffer physically, not mentally. But right now, you get a wound on your body, you hurt somewhere, you get an ache or a pain, do you only suffer physically? Isn't there at least a tiny bit of mental, why did this happen to me? Why me? There are so many other people at home, it could have happened to somebody else. Happened to me. There's that tiny thorn on the floor. Why my leg? Why my foot? Why didn't it happen to Malli? I would have been okay. That's why Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Because if we don't stop this circle of samsara, then forever we'll be burnt in the fires of samsara. Forever. Forever you'll be treating the symptoms of cough. Forever you'll be treating the symptoms of fever. Forever you'll be treating symptoms of rash. Symptoms of the disease to which you had no idea, no understanding, no treatment, no antibiotics. Natti me saranang anyang, that's why. Buddho me saranang varang. Natti me saranang anyang, that's why. Dhammo me saranang varang. Natti me saranang anyang, no one else is there for my refuge. Only the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. For any being, human, divine, celestial, whatever, any being, even in the great hells, for all sentient beings, there is only one way to put a stop to all suffering. For that, they have to go to a Buddha or a disciple of the Buddha. Nobody else. Everyone else will teach you how to relieve yourself from suffering, but not bring it to a stop. Now, don't you feel fortunate? Don't you feel lucky? Don't you feel blessed? Don't you feel like getting on the roof and shouting to the whole world? Look at me. I'm a son of the Buddha. I'm a daughter of the Buddha. Don't you feel like screaming, shouting your guts out? It is thanks to the Buddha that today I have this path. Every day that passes by, ladies and gentlemen, the more I begin to understand this Dhamma, the more respect, the more gratitude, the more veneration I begin to have in my heart and mind towards the Buddha. It grows day by day. 6 months ago, I thought I understood the Buddha. I thought I knew who the Buddha was. Little did I know. Only today I realize I didn't know him one tiny bit. I'm going to say this, the same thing again in another 6 months' time. Even the great elder Sariputta, who had utmost wisdom in the Buddha's Shasana, second to the Buddha, even the great Sariputta knew only about 40% of who the Buddha was. 40%? The great Sariputta, only about 40%, if not less. My palms are wet. Just talking of the Buddha. Just thinking about how fortunate I am. I don't know if you realize how lucky you are. I don't know if you realize how fortunate you are. How unique you are. There are 800 billion people in this world, ladies and gentlemen. 800 billion. Rather, 8 billion people in this world. 800 million. How many of them do you think see the Buddha? They'll see a figure of him. They'll take selfies with him. They'll go put garlands on him. They'll sit on his lap. They'll give him a peck on the cheek. But they'll die not knowing who the Buddha was. What was the point of having been born human? What's the point? They will die not knowing, not understanding his teaching. What was the point of having been born human? They will die not knowing who the great elder Sariputta was. They will die not knowing who Mahamoggallana was. What was the point of having been born human? The other day, one of the young monks in the monastery came and asked me, Swami Nuhan said, must I go down to the Buddha Puja every day? Can I not skip a day and just stay upstairs, stay at the monastery, or rather at the monks' quarters, not have to go every day? And then I said, Swami Nuhan sir, do you know how many deities, how many gods, how many Brahmas might come begging to you for an opportunity to become a slave to the Buddha, to be able to wear this robe? How many gods, devas, Brahmas might just be waiting for a chance to wear this robe? And yet they cannot. You think they have it nice and well because they can wish for it and it appears that you have to go down to get alms? You think it's tough on you? How many devas, when the Buddha was around, came to his feet, pleaded in front of him, pleaded in front of the great Sariputta? Remember his last days when he went to visit his mother and he was unwell? And the devas, Brahmas, even Mahabrahma came and asked the great elder Sariputta, please let me be at your feet and make offerings to you, let me take care of you. What did Venerable Sariputta say? No, no, no. I have my brethren, I have my brothers, other members of the Mahasangha who are there to look after me. Go away. I do not need your help. Now what's the point of becoming a deva? They can only long for it. They can only beg for it. But they will never be able to hear the Buddha say, my son. They will not be able to hear the words, you are my son. How fortunate do you think you are? How lucky do you think you are? How privileged do you think you are? You are very special people.
8 billion people in this world, only a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction will die knowing who the Buddha was. Who the Buddha is. Not was. Buddha is. People will die knowing who the Buddha was. They won't know who the Buddha is. Only a tiny fraction. You are so fortunate, ladies and gentlemen. You are so privileged. I don't know if you realize how fortunate you are. If only you could read my mind right now. I'm showering flowers at you. Can you see me? Every day after you offer a flower to the Buddha's feet, offer one at yours. And worship yourself. That's how fortunate, that's how privileged you are to have been born human. To roll in front of the Buddha and worship him. To kiss his feet. To make offerings to the Mahasangha. What can the devas do now? At least when the great elders were around, you know, some gods, some deities, they would take the form of humans and come and offer alms. But they don't do that anymore. Because the human world is not a place that they enjoy any longer. Because it's just filled with raga, dvesha and moha. But you have the chance to do that. I don't know if our anagarikas who are at the monastery realize how fortunate they are. I don't know if they realize. This is not a chance we've had all the time in samsara. Like this and it will be gone. Like this and you will not know where that key was. Where that key is. You'll pick the wrong key. You'll try to unlock the door. You'll spend a lifetime trying to unlock the door. Because you have not seen it. Because you did not receive instruction. Because sometimes you were too high up in your ego to go and ask for instruction. Because there was too much pride in you to go and ask for instruction. Never fall for that trap. I bring up the subject of pride regularly to an audience like this because it's easy for a well-educated, a well-to-do people to feel that sense of pride and ego. It's one I had to tackle with a lot myself. And I still do. Because I know that's what's keeping me from attaining my Nibbana. This is why I say to you, quite honestly, quite openly, don't let that take over. Be victorious. Because your father was victorious. Be undefeated. Because your father was undefeated. Be free. Because your father was free. Okay. 6:30 already. I think there's a video that if you've still got time, then do you still have time? Okay. So, where are you going to show it, Sam? Do you have a screen? Where? Oh, right, okay. Problem. If you're looking the wrong way, you're not going to see it. There are some sensitive images, so viewer's discretion is advised. Some images, some clips that have been taken from other sources, nothing we produced here, fortunately. But if you are too sensitive, then I would advise caution. But these are things that happen to people just like you and I. So what we ought to take from this is the uncertainty of life. If you are not fearless in front of death right now, this might help you to realize how earnestly, how rapidly and how quickly you need to be able to, you need to try and become fearless in the face of death. Because when this day comes, it's going to be too late. So watch and take from it what you can. Nati me saranam anyam Buddho me saranam varam Nati me saranam anyam Dhammo me saranam varam Nati me saranam anyam Sangho me saranam varam Nati me saranam anyam Nibbanam paramam sukham
think. This is the package. You signed up for the contract. You didn't read the terms, did you? Did any of those people, before the event happened, think that that would happen to them? Question is, do you think it's going to happen to you? They didn't think it was going to happen to them. But it did. You might not think it's going to happen to you. You can fill in the rest. This is the package. You didn't ask for that. They didn't ask for that. They wanted a world of enjoyment, pleasure, sensuality, sights and sounds and smells and tastes and touch. Oh, this world's full of it. Let me get myself eyes and ears and nose and tongue and a body so I can enjoy this world. That's what they asked for. Just as much as that's what you asked for. This is what they got. You can fill in the rest. Yesterday after this video was shown, Guru Swami Nuhansi said something that really touched me. He asked, what do you think is your biggest problem? All those people who, before they left home, before they got in their car, before they went out, they would have all had problems. How do I put my child to a school? How do I make myself a child? How do I buy myself a house? When do I get to upgrade my car? When do I get to go abroad? When do I get to get married? My boyfriend's just dumped me. When do I get myself a new one? All questions they had. Until reality struck. Now what do you think, that woman who was peeling her face off, what do you think her biggest problem is? Which of the above do you think is now her biggest problem? That man who was dismembered, his guts spewing all over the road, what do you think his biggest problem is now? He didn't think it was going to happen to him. She didn't think it was going to happen to her.
You don't think it's going to happen to you. Tell me what difference is there between he and you, between she and you. Isn't yours a body just like theirs? This is the package. He finally said, Guru Swami Nansi, he finally said, when you get homes, he gave you all a piece of homework, didn't he? He said, write an essay. If that was me, how would I be feeling right now? Put yourself in their shoes and write a speech. Write an essay. I've just got myself into an accident. I've just regained consciousness. I can hear sirens blazing. Oh, that must be the police. That must be the fire ambulance. I know something happened. But wait, I can feel something hanging on my head. What might it be? Let me get my hand and see what it feels like. Oh, it's my face. It's come off. What is this? I feel like a bowl in my hand. Oh, it's one of my eyes. And that's why I can see you left and down, not right. Put your hand up if you know for certain that's not going to happen tonight on your way back home. Go on. But what about all that money in your bank account? Surely that's going to help you stop that from happening. No? What about the fact that you're the prettiest girl in town? What about the fact that you're the most intelligent lad in school? What about the fact that you're the most highly paid employee in your office, at your workplace? Surely that's going to stop that from happening. No? What about the fact that you know a lot of Dhamma? What about the fact that you've read all 57 books of the Tripitaka? Surely that's going to stop that from happening. No? Oh. Well then guess what? We are stuffed. We are doomed. Now we are here. Can't reverse. Do you realize why you're so, you should be so happy, so grateful, so privileged that you're born human? How does a dog stop them from happening to itself? In this birth you can't help it, but you can make this the last time. How lucky do you feel now comparing yourself to someone who has no understanding of the Dhamma, who saw who the Buddha was, but who do not see who the Buddha is? Now how do you feel? Because you can make this the last time. I cannot vouch for how each of you will go. I can guarantee you will all go, but not how you will go. Make sure you give yourself a guarantee that wherever, whenever, however, whenever and however you go, you shall not come back. Give yourself that guarantee. And there's only one way you can do that. Get yourself the key. Take instruction. Unlock the door. And then walk the road of deathlessness. When you get to the end of that road, you can turn back on the world that you've left behind. And you can say your goodbye for the last time. Where awaiting you will be infinite bliss. But there'll be no person to enjoy it. It will be the bliss of having no pain to relieve yourself from. It will be the bliss of not having any suffering to relieve yourself from. That is the bliss of Nibbana. Because wherever there is existence, there itself is pain, suffering, lamentation, despair, frustration, disappointment. Package. You signed up for it. Let's get the hell out of here. We've been here long enough. I want to. I think you ought to. You can decide if you want to. If you do, then we can all go the same way. We can all get across this ocean and get to safe side. But I can't wait for you all, and neither should you wait for me. Because when it's time to suffer, we got to do that ourselves. Remember the buffet? Everyone's prepared to serve. But when it's time to eat, you got to do it yourself. Be honest. Last thing I'll say, at the end of the 5 precepts, there's a stanza that I recite. Remember that? Tisaranena saddhin panchasilang dhammang sadukhang surakkitang katva. Tisaranena saddhin panchasilang. Having observed these 5 precepts, having sought refuge in the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha, sadukhang surakkitang katva. Do good by them, abide by them, such that it helps you to unshackle yourselves from samsara. And then the last words are the words that the Buddha said himself, appamadena sampadeta. Be honest. Don't waste time. The clocks are ticking. That day is on its way. Not if, when. Is it English or Sinhala today? I think last week we recited in English. Sinhala? Okay. Just for our online listeners, we'll make the video available. We haven't done so yet, have we? No. So we'll make it available to you so you can watch it and put what I just said after that into context. Okay. Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satmayo sansara dahayen midetva sansara rogayen midetva sansara bhayen midetva sansara ginnen midetva nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita tarvetva nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita tarvetva nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita tarvetva mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo raga bandhanayen midetva dvesha bandhanayen midetva moha bandhanayen midetva mara bandhanayen midetva nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita tarvetva nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita tarvetva nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita tarvetva mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo jati ginnen midetva jara ginnen midetva vyadhi ginnen midetva මරණ ගින්නෙන් මිදෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා මමද සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝ ශෝක ගින්නෙන් මිදෙත්වා පරිදේවයෙන් මිදෙත්වා දුක්ඛ ගින්නෙන් මිදෙත්වා දෝමනස් සයෙන් මිදෙත්වා උපායාසයෙන් මිදෙත්වා යම් පිච්ඡන්න ලබති තම්පි දුක්ඛයෙන් මිදෙත්වා සංකිට්තේන පංචෝපාදානස්කන්ධයෙන් මිදෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා කාම ලෝක අනාතයි එයින් මිදෙත්වා රූප ලෝක අනාතයි එයින් මිදෙත්වා අරූප ලෝක අනාතයි එයින් මිදෙත්වා සියලු ලෝක අනාතයි එයින් මිදෙත්වා අතහැරීම නාතයි අතහැරීම වෙත්වා නොඇල්ම නාතයි නොඇල්ම වෙත්වා මිදීම නාතයි මිදීම වෙත්වා නිවනම නාතයි නිවනම 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 වෙත්වා නක්ති මේ සරණං අඤ්ඤං බුද්ධෝ මේ සරණං වරං නක්ති මේ සරණං අඤ්ඤං ධම්මෝ මේ සරණං වරං නක්ති මේ සරණං අඤ්ඤං සංඝෝ මේ සරණං වරං නක්ති මේ සරණං අඤ්ඤං නිබ්බානං පරමං සුඛං
Okay. Let us take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired today to all beings who are looking for merits, all beings who deserve these merits. Some of them may be born in the woeful plains where to them this Dhamma is of no use, alas. But to them merits is all
that they can survive on, all that they can thrive on, in the hope that these merits help them to redeem themselves from those woeful planes and be born in the blissful planes. Let us transmit it. And for those in the blissful planes, may these merits help them to empower themselves and energize themselves in order to fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. First and foremost, as we did at the beginning, let us take a moment to reflect once again that it is because of the Supremely Enlightened One, the Infinitely Compassionate One, the Infinitely Wise One, the Unparalleled One, the Unequalled One, the Unvanquished One, the Omniscient One, the Supremely Enlightened Gautama Samma Sambuddhajana Mahansi, that we have the gift of Dhamma today. It is because of His infinite sacrifice through many millions of eons in samsara that we have this gift of Dhamma today. It is because of the Bhikkhu Bhikkhunis Upasaka Upasikas who were His disciples, who listened to, understood, comprehended His teaching, protected and preserved the gift of Dhamma, that we are able today to study, analyze and contemplate and make use of the Dhamma within our own lives. So, wherever they may be, some of them sacrifice their lives in order to protect and preserve this Dhamma. So, it is possible that there is no saying where they may be born today. May through the power of the merits that we have all acquired today, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, may these merits help them to be born in the blissful plane. May they all be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to all members of the Mahasangha, Bhikkhu Bhikkhunis, Upasaka Upasikas, the Mahanayakas, the Anunayakas, and so on and so forth. May they all be able to rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. As well as that, let us take a moment to transfer merits to the monks and nuns in your local temples and your local nunneries, because although you may come along once a week, perhaps a few times a week, and listen to the sermons, perhaps offer alms to the members of the Sangha who are resident in this monastery, it is those monks and nuns who are in your local temples and nunneries that are always by your side, who are always there to help you in rain or shine through thick and thin, who themselves don robes to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. However, today they have dedicated some of that time for your benefit in order to help you in your daily life's needs and wants. So, may the merits that we have all acquired today be transferred to them. May they all be able to rejoice in these merits. If in the past any of them have been born in the woeful planes, may these merits help them to be born in the blissful plane. May through the power of these merits they be able to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas, Brahma, spirits, demons and the dead, who throughout our infinite long journey in samsara might have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. Wherever they may be today, if they are longing for merits, may these merits be transferred to them. May through the power of these merits they be able to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors, those who predeceased us, those who might have been mothers, fathers, brothers, uncles, sisters, grandparents, so on and so forth in this birth, but also not just in this birth, but also in previous births. If any of them today have been born in the woeful plane, today perhaps some of them have been born in the woeful plane because they sacrificed themselves for your benefit on your behalf. So, may through the power of these merits they be able to rejoice in them and be able to redeem themselves from those woeful planes. Through the power of these merits, may they be able to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to your parents in this birth, your mother, your father, who went through so much to bring you up, who fed you, clothed you, dressed you, gave you shelter and were there for you through rain and shine, through thick and thin. Whether they were with you in person or not, it is because of them that you today are able to enjoy this human life. Today you are able to practice the Noble Eightfold Path. So, wherever they may be, may they be able to rejoice in this merit. Also, pass on this merit to your teachers who from your very young ages were there to help you and guide you in your lives by showing you right from wrong, by teaching you the very basics of living life itself in society. It is thanks to them that today you have grown up and to become good law-abiding citizens of this country. It is because of them that today you are able to stay away from trouble. So may they all be able to rejoice in these merits that we have all acquired today. For any of them who have been today born in the woeful planes, may these merits help them to be born in the blissful plane. For those beings on the blissful plane, may through the power of these merits, they be able to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to all those who were vital in organizing this sermon, who helped, assisted and supported in making this sermon possible and achievable. Those who might have prepared this venue, those who might have contributed in organizing this stage, in making these offerings to the Dhamma, in making these offerings to the Buddha, in making offerings to the Sangha, all in the hope that these contribute to your understanding, your comprehension of the Dhamma. May they all be able to rejoice in these merits. Also, anyone who might have invited you to be here today, those who might have offered you a glass of water, perhaps offered you a meal in order to sate your hunger, such that you are able to listen to this sermon comfortably and are able to practice the Noble Eightfold Path through the course of this sermon itself, may they all be able to rejoice in these merits. Also, spare a moment for those and pass merits to those who might have redeemed you from your duties and responsibilities such that they gave you the time, the leisure time to be present here today to listen to this sermon. It is thanks to them that today you are able to make use of this opportunity. Perhaps today they are back home looking after your children, or perhaps your parents, or perhaps your family, your loved ones, or perhaps they are looking after your ventures, your enterprises, your businesses, your workplace, so on and so forth. It is thanks to them that then today that you have this time to listen to this sermon and to practice the Noble Eightfold Path for your redemption. So let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them as well. Also, let us take a moment to those who might have afforded you transport to be here today, perhaps in driving those vehicles or perhaps in making those vehicles available to you. May they all be able to rejoice in these merits. If anyone might have supported you, helped you, assisted you, either by preparing your journey or perhaps by offering you a glass of water, or even perhaps by washing your clothes or perhaps ironing them and making them suitable and available to you to dress yourself up to be here today, in whichever shape or form, if anyone might have contributed even a modicum, may they all be able to rejoice in these merits. For those beings who were there in the past who might have helped you, assisted you, supported you, may through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, be able to be born in the blissful plane. And for those beings who are today in the blissful plane, may through the power of these merits they be able to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to the members of the armed forces who, throughout a 30-year-long war in Sri Lanka, sacrificed their lives to protecting and preserving our motherland. It is thanks to them that today we are able to practice this Dhamma and engage in meritorious deeds in peace and harmony with those, with other human beings who perhaps might have different views and disciplines to ourselves. Also, members of the police force who sacrifice themselves for our benefit on our behalf. Any of them who might have been born in the woeful plane, may they be able to rejoice in these merits and be able to be born in the blissful plane. May these merits help them to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to those who might have lost their lives in the natural disasters and calamities such as the tsunamis, earthquakes, and so on and so forth. Not just in Sri Lanka, but also in other countries, in other parts of the world. If any of them are today longing for merit, if any of them today are looking for merit, may through the merits that we have all acquired today, they be able to rejoice in them. If any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may through the power of these merits, they be able to be born in the blissful plains. May these merits help them to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to those men and women who today have dedicated time in their valuable lives to protecting this country, to developing this country, to leading this country, because if not for them, today you and I will have to be doing them, protecting this country, developing this country, and leading this country. It is thanks to them that today we have been freed from such duties and responsibilities and are able to dedicate our lives to practicing the Noble Eightfold Path and our redemption. So let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them as well. Wherever they may be, whatever office they may be holding, whatever business or venture or enterprise they may be engaged in, may through the power of these merits they be able to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may through the power of all the merits that we have all acquired today in offering alms to the Buddha, the Mahasangha, in making offerings to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, in making this event possible, in making contributions to this Dhamma sermon, either in providing the physical facilities required to be able to be present here today, or perhaps in making the technology available so that people in other countries can listen to these sermons, either recorded or live as well. In any way, shape or form, whatever merit that we might have acquired, big or small, may through the power of all those merits, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds and thousands of Arahatun Vahanses on this blessed land itself, in the time of our life itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may you and I and everyone who might have contributed to this meritorious deed be able to become one of those Arahatun Vahanses, one of those Arahat Mihin Vahanses through the course of our life itself in the era of the Gautama Samma Sambhujanan Vahanse itself. May the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. May these merits help us all to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Members of the Mahasangha will now pass on their blessings to you. Raga ginnin midatnva dvesha ginnin midatnva moha ginnin midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Tunuruvange suvisi ananta maha guna belin Silu loka silu sattayom Nibbana paramasukhen sukhita taravetva Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fires of desire, freed from the fires of aversion, freed from the fires of delusion. May all beings attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. May the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.